You're listening to KZSC Santa Cruz, 88.1 FM and KZSC.org. My name is John Malkin, and this is Transformation Highway. Today, we will be celebrating the 60th anniversary of the San Francisco Mime Troupe, who are in fact not mimes. The Mime Troupe will be here in Santa Cruz again, doing a free show at San Lorenzo Park on Saturday, September 7th, and Sunday, September 8th, both at 3 o'clock. There's also music happening at 2:30 before the shows. Again, that's at San Lorenzo Park, and this year's show is titled Treasure Island, and it discusses plans to build housing on San Francisco's Treasure Island, brings in also topics about climate change and affordable housing, and cleaning up the toxic and radioactive waste left by the U.S. Navy on Treasure Island. Lots of political topics from this political theater group that has been going for 60 years. I will have on the phone to discuss the Mime Troupe, Ellen Callas. And she is the general manager of the San Francisco Mime Troupe and a collective member. She's also a teacher, writer, director, and actor. And a long time ago, she co-founded the Hit and Run Theater in 1976. In 1986, she joined the Mime Troupe. And she was also part of Second City, and she's been an actor and stage manager for a lot of different productions over the years. And Ellen, I'd like to warmly welcome you to the program. Hi there.
Hi there. I'll make a small correction. I wasn't part of Second City. I learned improv at Second City.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
And
foolishly left Chicago before I got that far, but you know, that was the time when Chicago was the second city, and you had to move out to New York or California, anywhere but there. And now I love going back. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, and what drew you to theater and being on stage anyway, and then what drew you to the Mime Troupe and its political take on theater?
Well, in my particular case, I think it's genetic. You know, I'm 100% Greek, and as you know, Greeks invented democracy and theater, popular theater. You know, way back to Aristophanes and political theater in the round, it always seemed to me a really good match. You know, I've been one of those kids. I was one of those kids that made the puppet shows on the block for all the local kids, and I was always organizing my cousins into various productions that we would perform. So it's always been there, and I've always been politically oriented. My father was a history poli-sci major and active local in the local democratic politics of Chicago. And so, you know, I remember going door-to-door with him when I was four, campaigning for Adlai Stevenson. So it's just been in the blood for a long time. And when I... with Hit and Run Theater, that's what we did. We did political sketch comedy. So when I moved back down to the city in 86, an opportunity came up at the Mime Troupe, and it was just a natural fit. So it was like stepping from one political theater family to another. So it's been pretty cool.
Would you say a bit about this year's show? It's called Treasure Island and is grappling with a lot of things that many cities across this country are grappling with: gentrification, building up...
climate change.
Yeah, climate change, affordable housing.
Toxic waste.
Tell us about...
Basically the legacy of the 20th century, you know.
Yeah, kind of all the...
Well, it's based on Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island, so the characters are named similarly. Use that as a rough outline because, A, it's a great story, as those classics tend to be, and it just seemed naturally, with our own Treasure Island out here, that it was a perfect clothes horse to hang this story on. So... there's a lot, you know, I, in the last couple of years, have been working with our youth theater group, and a lot of those Young people live in the Bayview district of San Francisco, Hunters Point in the Bayview, and we've been doing shows, they've been writing shows, based on what they've been learning about the toxins in their neighborhood. And I don't know how familiar you are with it, but the Navy Yard there, which built a lot of the Liberty ships and did a lot of the decontamination theory, in theory, of the radioactivity, paid a company to do a cleanup before it turned it over to the city and to developers. And about a couple of years ago, I mean, this has been going on for a long time, and there's been people investigating this for a long time, but about a year and a half ago, one of the actual workers for this company, Tetra Tech, stepped forward and blew the whistle and said, yes, in fact, this company has been falsifying the records, and the stuff is not cleaned up. And meanwhile, houses, expensive condos, although not as expensive as they could be in San Francisco, but still relatively expensive, are being built, and people are moving in. And so it's, a catastrophe. Meanwhile, out in the water in Treasure Island, a similar scenario is being played out, where the Navy, first of all, Treasure Island, the thing you have to understand about Treasure Island itself is it's not an actual real island built on rocks. It's just really fill. It's silt landfill, a lot of it from the earthquake of 1906. A lot of it's just they built a seawall and filled it with sand, and then had the Columbia Exposition out there, and then when that was over, filled in those buildings, and then the Navy took over in the 30s and started building little radioactive gizmos to go on the eventual warplanes that would be used in bombing using atomic bombs. I mean, all sorts of little things like optical devices that have per capita unbelievable amounts of radioactive materials in them. They did things like they brought a dummy ship called the Pandemonium and infused it with radiation and used that as a training ground for the Navy cleanup crew. So all that runoff would go into the local water there and into the sewers. And then on top of that, after they were done with that, there's all sorts of other toxins all over the place. Then they built housing to house these poor Navy people and their families. And then after the Navy moved out and it was going to go to San Francisco on the contingency that they had to clean it up. And so once again, they paid these companies that really didn't do the cleanup. And so now San Francisco has got this piece of property that is not properly cleaned up, actually, even though it says it is. And you've got a host of developers just chomping at the bit to go out there and build these high-rise luxury condos and you name it. And simultaneously, because of the housing crisis in San Francisco and the increasing amount of homeless families, not even just homeless individuals, the city made available a lot of the housing out there. So there's a lot of people living out there that can't afford to live in the city. So the reality is nobody should be living out there because it's extremely toxic. Then you add in the factor of climate change and being in an earthquake zone, and you've got, a liquefaction nightmare. And, I could go on and on. And out of that, we created a very funny play.
And not only that, it's a musical.
It's a musical with really great songs, and it's very funny. A lot, needless to say, who doesn't want to do a show with pirates in it? It's so much fun. And there's a lot of swordplay, actually quite skilled swordplay, I might say. It's not just people out there with Nerf swords. They really worked at it. And so it's quite fun because, as one of the writers, it's so much fun to write pirate speak. And then you have to, of course, pull it back so it's understandable. But we tell the story of this young eager city servant, civil servant, who's trying to make the world a better place, and the characters she encounters and the secrets that are revealed and she discovers. And that's pretty much like Treasure Island. You know, you have the villain whose mask is very smooth and protective of her, and it's fun. So it's classic Mind Flayer fare in the sense that it packs a lot of important information, and I might add information that many people don't even know in San Francisco. This is really, it's been so under the radar, clearly intentionally, by the people that are moving forward because they don't want people to know this. And so there have been groups that have been doggedly uncovering this stuff and providing information. And thankfully, because that's where we've gotten a lot of our research from, too. And, but it's important because not only is this, I mean, this is a San Francisco show. Some people say it's so San Francisco-centric. But the reality is this is kind of a wake-up call for communities to look around and see, you know, what could be under the ground you're on, you know. The military base is all over this country. God only knows. In the Bay Area alone, aside from Hunter's Point and Bayview and Treasure Island, there's Mare Island, which, you know, that's probably the next one to get discovered. You know, there's stuff in Alameda. There are maps of the bay for sailors, you know, for recreational sailors, with huge spots X'd out saying, don't drop your anchors over here, because there's just oil drums full of toxins, you know, not just radioactivity, but all sorts of, you know, PCBs, you know, dioxin, you know, you name it. It's kind of scary and depressing. But you can do one of two things. You can either go, well, you know, we're screwed, and put your head in the sand, or you can demand some kind of action, which is RMO, as we just try to, like, because you can't let them win. You know, I have to at least go down without a fight, you know. So that's what we do on stage. And you know, even in Santa Cruz, I mean, right down the coast from you, you have Fort Ord, where the university is now. And, you know, I'm not sure I'm not trying to be pose something that's not, but where are the guarantees that area isn't clean? So it's something that can be applied across the board. So people just have to really pay attention to the men behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. This is KZSC 88.1 FM. My name is John Malkin. This is Transformation Highway, and today I have on the telephone Ellen Kellis, and she is the general manager for the San Francisco Mime Troupe, and she's discussing the 60th year performance for the San Francisco Mime Troupe. It's called Treasure Island, and it's coming here to Santa Cruz on Saturday and Sunday, September 7th and September 8th.
That a month later, so we put Treasure Island to bed, and then on October 7th we're going to have in San Francisco, so everybody mark that on your calendar, a big celebration and epic retrospective of our 60 years, and we're going to have a lot of guest stars, everybody from Will Durst to Josh Kornbluth, Maria Muldaur, Diane Amos, a bunch of other folks, a bunch of old mime troopers coming in and reprising their roles and scenes and songs. And it's going to be, and it's at the Presidio Theater up in the newly renovated. God, it's beautiful on the Presidio. So that'll be a fun event, too. But,
fantastic.
This show is in Santa Cruz, is the last of our season. So if you have friends in the Bay Area that haven't seen the show, invite them down for the weekend and come see the show together.
Since you helped write the lyrics and the words for Treasure Island, I'm just curious to hear about that process, how that goes in a cooperative political theater group. And also, there is a lot of material that you could be potentially doing theater about, and you have to hone in and decide what among all of it you're going to do. I mean, there's worldwide surveillance and too much gun violence, drone warfare, racism, and police misconduct. How do you decide as a group what you're going to do the annual play about?
Well, I'll tell you, it's not easy because there is so much. Our group process is that as we're an artistic collective, and so in that collective are, you know, musicians, writers, technicians, actors, directors, all of us, and there's 11 of us right now, and we act also as the artistic director, the many-headed artistic director. So we come together, usually in the latter part of, like, in the latter part of this year, we'll start meeting and putting our hats on and going, okay, what is what we call our burning issues? And everybody will say, you know, I really feel strongly about the environment, you know, and what it's going to do to the population of immigrants. You know, there's going to be a new a nomadic culture as people are forced from their homes. I think this is something we really need to write about. Somebody else would say, you know, the racial profiling has just really been on my radar, you know. So we put it all out there, and then we discuss ad nauseum, and then factor in also, you know, what's happening. You know, what's going to be happening around as much as you can see, because God knows nobody knew any of this stuff was coming. You know, 8 years ago, if you told me this is what was happening now, the great unraveling, it would be a shock to me. So, you know, we try to figure out what we need to say at that time. For example, next year is clearly probably the most important presidential election of our lifetimes. And so what are we going to say about it? Well, now, we cannot endorse, because of our nonprofit status, we cannot endorse candidates, but we can encourage people to vote and tell them what's at stake if they don't. So I think that's important. And I think we also, you know, try to take a page from what the broader concerns on. So it's not just about me, you know. It's not like if I want to do a show about the price of coffee going up, but clearly everybody else is concerned about climate change, you know, then that's probably where we're going to go. But maybe there's a way you can connect the two, because of the farmers in Costa Rica having a difficult time or something, you know. So we try to, as we always say, follow the money, because when it comes right down to it, that's what it is. You know, our theater style is based in a very ancient form that literally does go back to ancient Greece and Rome in the comedias, where the actors would go out into the marketplace and assume these very broad character types that were also clearly labeled as the people in power. You know, so it's always been about the classes, you know, the haves and the have-not, the servants and the masters, you know. So that's what popular theater in the marketplace has always been about, and that's what we do. And so we show those characters on stage. We typically have a character in mime troupe shows that at some point during the course of the play reaches kind of a moral fork in the road, where they have to make a decision, you know. Do they do what might better them financially, or at the risk of doing some kind of environmental damage or socio-political damage, or, you know, what is that choice? And it's not unusual for people in the audience, when the character's on stage at that moment, going, no, don't do it, or when they make the right decision, cheering them on. It's that kind of populist heroics that I think people, particularly now, really need. You know, it's essential to feel like you can still make a difference, because I think right now everybody's walking around with their head in the grounds, you know, thinking, you know, woe is me, and it's fatigued. You know, we have definitely administration fatigue at this point, because the 24/7 news cycle is relentless, and most of the news is bad. You know, I mean, how many gun shootings do you have to have in a week before people get the message? You know, I mean, the environmental reports are brutal, and so yeah, we can give up, you know, or we can do our best to change the course, you know, of it all. I have to say, too, doing this pirate show this year, the pirate and ship and nautical references have been just unrelenting, you know, and without even realizing it, you know, you realize that's kind of, you know, kind of like the mime trooper, like when we're all the crew on this ship, this 60-year-old ship that's been steering through these, you know, navigating these troubled waters of, like, socio-political unrest for 60 years, and, you know, with periodic calm seas, and then, you know, another hurricane comes in. And so, but our job is just to keep that ship moving forward towards the sun, for lack of a better metaphor. And, you know, sometimes over the years, the crew has changed, but the people that are on that crew have the same ideals, and that's what keeps the troop going, and that's what keeps us producing these shows. So, you know, with that kind of collective spirit and passion, when it comes down to writing shows, it's like, what is the most important thing we can say and we can leave our audiences with? What is the most important thing, you know, we can inspire them to do, you know, or how can we give them the information they need to move forward? Or with our characters, we can also show the sympathetic characters, we can also show the villains and try to create more of an understanding. Not that you necessarily agree with the villains, but perhaps you can see what motivates them. And that is a tool towards greater communication, because right now, oh my gosh, everybody is so divided and so stuck in their own camps that it's going to take a sociological earthquake to get people all on the same page and do the work we have to do. And, you know, right now there's some serious obstacles, but I do feel like there's more of us than of them. You know, we just have to keep from factionalizing.
Ellen, I can imagine that sometimes the productions of the San Francisco Mime Troupe do inspire a lot of activism in different locations where you do your shows, and that may have even in the past affected official programs or government policies or things like that. Can you think of any instances, current or in the past, where you have hooked up with activists and help to make some change? And it's just great to hear that theater, of course, presents ideas and political ideas, and some for the first time to populations. And there's a great tradition of this around the whole world, of having on the street, in marketplaces, live present theater presenting revolutionary ideas.
Right. Well, that's what it's all about. I mean, theater is, you create a community with your audience, and it's non-confrontational. I mean, even if it's confrontational on stage between the characters, the people in the audience, you know, can be involved, but not be, it's not threatening to them, you know, and in a way, it makes them see these different points of view without them having to defend their own, so they can take it in. It's a way of taking in the information you need without having to be in a confrontational situation, or, you know, you can just let it sink in. I think, you know, for us, I mean, that's how the troupe really, you know, in the very first year when they actually did do a kind of mime, it was more like performance art. When the Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement started kicking in, that's what really made the troupe change course. Once again, another logical term, I'm sorry. And really start to superimpose the politics onto the art. And starting with old classic Molière comedias, and then putting over it, overlaying, you know, the Vietnam War, you know, so that maybe the miser was a military industrialist, and then doing shows about civil rights and then women's rights. And then also, you know, out of the troupe have spawned many other companies, too, including the Pickle Family Circus, Teatro Campesino. Came from Luis Valdez was in the mime troupe, and was inspired to go down and create theater with the farm workers in San Juan Bautista. You know, there have been many people that have come in and gone back to their communities and created theater. Some you've heard of and some not, but that, to me, that's even more gratifying, that kind of Johnny Appleseed effect, because in this country, it's not like in the European tradition where every small town has, or even in Asia, where there has some kind of small activist theater company that is discussing issues in, often in their particular native form, you know, whether it's Jatra in India, or, you know, Italian Commedia or circus in Europe, people are doing it. And in this country, you know, our entertainment is so kind of categorized. You know, there's like the big ticket movies in Broadway, and then the mid range, and then in terms of our kind of theater, not so much. Although all art is political, so I think there are more and more people, and as the forces out there seem to do battle with artists these days by forcing them to leave their homes, or because of economics, or withholding grant monies because of their content. You know, people do get radicalized. So, and just the importance of, you know, you can use your bully pulpit, so to speak, to address issues that are never going to make it on sponsored television by, you know, corporate sponsored television, for example, without being super watered down. So, you know, when we first started, there was no internet. There was, you know, we were kind of, along with the alternative press, the conduit of radical thought to the general public. Nobody really questioned the ethics of the Vietnam War initially, because that's, you know, war is our business, our only business. And and then when the troop, and not just the troop, but, you know, a vast population of young people at that time said, wait a minute, stop the bus, it all changed. And so a lot of the information then that we were able to, again, do was to connect the dots. You know, why are we in this war? Who is this person over here? Who is this Mr. Big? I mean, when we did Dragon Lady's Revenge, it was a story in a very classic style about drug connections in Southeast Asia. So, you know, we did a show called Scene Double, which addressed the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and advocated a two-state solution. And we actually brought it to Israel. And they thought we did mime, so they were very shocked when we came there. But it was a very successful and controversial show because it showed both sides, not just one side. And it was very moving, actually. So we've done shows. We did a show called Offshore about trans-Pacific trade, and how it affected everybody from the California rice farmer to the contract worker in Thailand, you know, who was moving to Hong Kong to get a better job as a maid. So it really has to do with, again, you know, the distribution of wealth, what makes people, like in the Asian show Big Win, which we collaborated on with a bunch of Asian theater companies, over there, there's a children's game called Big Win, and it's like big win blows, you know, where you end up nobody knows, kind of. And that's what the global economy and, you know, the corporate structure of that is now developed into, this 1% of the 1%, and then everybody else, you know. So So it's there's a lot. So we're never at a loss for material. The hard part is to try to figure out how to, like, not overload it. You know, we can only do one show a year, and even if we're touching on numerous themes in that show, we certainly can't get everything, but God knows we try. But you still have to make it entertaining and not so dense. I mean, so much of the time we spend so much time editing. We overwrite because there's so much information you want to get out there. But then you go, well, wait a minute, this is an entertainment too. So you have to selectively pull out and know how to, like, highlight the stuff that's really you want to stick. And then make sure that you, in your program, have references, kind of the read more about it section. Because ultimately, you still want people to have fun. Because if they're having fun and they're laughing and they're enjoying it, then when they're on the bus on the way home and they're thinking, that was great, but wow, I did not know that, you know, then maybe that'll make them kind of be activated. That's our objective. Entertain and activate. Motivate.
You mentioned distribution of wealth as being one core issue that is causing a lot of suffering. There's a very small minority that has most of the wealth around the whole world, especially in the United States. And we grew up in this country where we're taught that there are no classes, and there's not really a space for criticizing capitalism. I agree that it's a core issue and problem. And you also mentioned the internet. Of course, the San Francisco Mime Troupe has been around much longer than the internet. I'm just curious your thoughts about how important now it is to have things in reality, music, theater, people participating directly in their lives, not on a computer or a digital device?
Well, I'm pretty old school on that one. I mean, I think it's essential to humankind. I mean, I think that the internet's great. I think it's great to be able to get on there and, like, FaceTime with your nephew in France right now or something like that. I think that that's awesome. I think it's great that political movements can be ignited through telephones, you know, and make revolution. I also think that the flip side of that is clearly dangerous because there are a lot of, I don't know what you call them, not trolls, but organizations out there that can use the internet, just another tool, use it to do things like throw elections and things like that. I think people need to engage. I think one of the things that's important right now is people need to have actual FaceTime with each other and not just hide behind the cloak of their particular tribe, you know, or their particular news station. You know, there was a time, I was just talking about this the other day, I heard somebody talk, and I said, yeah, that's exactly right. Back in the day when I was a child, and there were just like three, you know, network stations, and don't get me wrong, I love having the options, but everybody watched the same news. You know, everybody watched Walter Cronkite, and then you'd sit around the dinner table and you'd talk about it. Now you can dial in to whatever your particular political bent is, and so it's not so much straight-ahead journalism is opinion in there, too, so you're reinforcing your views, whether it's on the far right or the far left. You know, you choose, and I think that that can be dangerous. And so I think the getting people together and actually having conversations, we do this with our youth project, and it's just amazing to see the transformation in teens over a period of like 8 to 12 weeks when they come in and they don't know each other, and we kind of do these. Basically what we do over in the 8 to 12 week period is what we do. And so at the end, we create an ensemble. We do skill building with them. We talk about archetypes, who they are, that we instruct the physical kind of theater that we do, which is really based on those archetypes, building a character from the ground up. It's not just acting from the neck up like you do in, you know, other kinds of media. So, and then we get to the burning issues, and they, by that time, they have built trust amongst themselves. They've created a safe space, and they talk about their burning issues. And out of that, we find maybe a story and maybe a genre that would fit it, and we help them write their play, and they perform it. At the end of it all, it is so amazing to see what it has done for them individually, but also collectively, you know, because they've been able to break out of the shell of, like, nobody wants to hear what I have to say, to exchange of ideas and learning and listening, which is really important. Listening is a lost art, so that's another reason for face-to-face, to be able to really listen to people and not just wait for your chance to break into the conversation, put your two cents in. I think, you know, real communication is an art, and we're in danger of losing it right now. So, I said I was old school, but, you know, I think there's room for everything. I just think that, and you know, we have to just be war, as they say in the play. You know, we have to beware of a false god, so to speak. You know, we have to really be able to make our own decision. I think that's, you know, one of the failings of our educational system, and this rush to just churn people into jobs, is like to create an educational system that encourages critical thought so people can have discussions and form their own opinions and not just accept somebody else's opinion or, you know, as their own, because that's what's cool. And I think, you know, I see examples, you know, when the kids in Parkland spoke out after their tragedy and refused to back down, it was really amazingly encouraging and inspiring. And I think that people just really need to talk to each other and talk back to the people calling the shots. You know, they need to take it back. The people take it back from the corporations that are invested in a system that is not benefiting real democracy. You know, I mean, there's the big question: can capitalism and democracy coexist? Not the way it's going right now, I don't think. You know, and I think that democracy, true participatory democracy, requires people's participation. So it's a lot of work, and as long as you, and it's hard when you're like struggling to pay your ridiculously overpriced rent. And, you know, everything is taxing. You don't have any time because you're working 15 jobs and trying to go to school or doing whatever you're doing. You know, it wears you down. And so it's one of the reasons, another one of the reasons we do what we do, because sometimes people say, oh, well, you guys just preach to the choir. I say, yeah, but sometimes, you know, the choir needs a pep rally. You know, sometimes they need to sit there with each other, you know, a couple of hundred people that are closer to them than they think, and feel, oh, yeah, you know, the people do have the power.
Yes. Good to remember that always. And Ellen Callis is who I've been speaking with. She is the San Francisco Mime Troupe's general manager. She's a collective member. She helped to write the shows, including the one that's happening now. It's called Treasure Island. The last performance of Treasure Island is happening in Santa Cruz at San Lorenzo Park next weekend, September 7th and 8th. That's Saturday and Sunday. The shows are at 3:00. Music starts at 2:30. And Ellen, I'm really,
by the way, so you should definitely check it out.
Mm-hmm. I'm really delighted we could talk today. Thank you for making time. And would you just remind people briefly what the theme of this show is about, Treasure Island?
In 20 words or less, let me see. It's what happens when you have a perfect storm of toxins, you know, created by military waste or any other kind of industrial waste. Global warming, which affects everything, the water table included, and the inevitable greed brokers and political lackeys that do their bidding. It's a perfect storm of disaster, and the people that are at the eye or at the of the storm, or not the eye of the storm, wherever the storm, the focal point of where the storm hits, are the people, the poor people, the people that need the most help, and they're the people that are most at peril. And so, you know, we have to help each other. You know, we can't just let runaway developers lie to people and not provide real information, and we need to find homes for people that need it. We need to clean up we have a lot of work to do, and everything is connected, and that's the thing. I mean, I guess in a nutshell, everything is connected, and you roll away one rock and there's you know, another pile that you have to deal with. So, but it's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, it's heroes and villains, mm-hmm. Haves and have-nots. It's song and music, and it will give you some information, some of which you might know, but some of which you might need to be reminded about, and some which you couldn't even conceive of. But it'll make you look closer to those issues and then wonder about more of your local issues. And you just have to challenge the people that are making the shots for you. There's a great line in the play, and I can't even begin to paraphrase it correctly, but the heroine of the play at the end says, we can't let the people who are making decisions for us, you know, get away with this, basically. You know, we have to be the ones that call them on the carpet. We can't just just sit there and be victims of their greed.
Ellen, thank you very much for making time speaking with me today.
And absolutely.
Congratulations on the 60th year of the San Francisco Mime Troupe.
Yeah. All thank right. you. We
yeah.
made it.
Yeah, you
and
did.
We're still going.
Still thriving.
We're going to go for another 60, maybe without the mime part, though.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. Hey, thank you. Enjoy the day there.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
San Francisco Mime Troupe show, Treasure Island. The last show of the summer performances happening here in Santa Cruz at San Lorenzo Park on Saturday, September 7th, Sunday, September 8th, both at 3 o'clock. The music starts a little earlier at 2:30. Here's a piece from the theater production, and this is called Never Forget the Sea You've Sailed, right here on KZSC Santa Cruz 88.1 FM.
Empty Main Street. Pavements cracked. That's the town I'm from, Jill. Love was one more thing we lacked. That's the town I'm from, Jill. All the ways I brave to get here dwarf the ones to come, Jill. Never forget the seas you've sailed. A V5 ferry I marry.
Never forget the seas you've sailed.
Here we are.